www.newyorktimes.net.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
Well, the first thing I do as president is sign the Freedom of Choice Act.
Al, I am so happy to hear you again.
This is awesome. It was a big game. It's a Super Bowl. We had to come out and do it, and we did it.
Proud to be on with you. I really am. I'd rather be here than anywhere else.
God love you.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
Well, it's music to my ears, what you're saying on the radio.
I have followed my conscience and done what I thought was right.
Contraception will reduce cost to the state.
I have clearly found my radio network. I don't know where you guys have been all my life, but this is right up my alley.
And a good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. We've got much coming up on this next 2 hours of Cresta in the Afternoon. Let me say, we've got a few stories here that make my skin crawl. The Alex Rodriguez story, for instance, steroids in baseball, back in the headlines. Now, look at this. It's disgraceful behavior. People lying, people juicing themselves up. It's just obvious that what's required in professional sports is not virtue, but victory, and by any means necessary. We'll talk about it, though, because there are moral and ethical issues involved, so Vic Faust joins me, and Vic's been covering sports for the ABC affiliate in Detroit. Also coming up, Stephen Baskerville, about the government and its role in marriage. How did we get to the place where marriage can be dissolved unilaterally? One party simply says, I'm done with this covenant. I'd like to know how many other contracts there are like that, where I can just walk up and say, hey, I'm out of here. One of the things government's supposed to do is enforce contracts. Also coming up on today's Crest in the Afternoon, we'll be looking at that slippery slope of government deciding who can have babies and when. This is pushed into the news because of Nadia Suleiman for having now 14 children and no father, just a sperm donor. She has no job, no income, over $50,000 in student loans. These kids are precious, but Nadia is questioning what's upstairs. Maybe nada, I don't know. But it's a bad, bad situation. Plus, news coming out that she does have serious problems with depression, paranoia, and other forms of mental illness. And then the last hour of today's program, we do take a look at the stimulus bill. It has been passed through reconciliation. Nick will give you the details on that in just a moment. But we do have an economic stimulus package now, acceptable to both House and Senate. Thomas Woods joins me. Meltdown is the topic. Free market look at why the stock market collapsed, the economy tanked, and government bailouts, why government bailouts will make things worse. I'd say Thomas's book is one of the most lucid portrayals of the problem that I've come across. So I'm going to enjoy the conversation with him, and I guarantee you will learn a great deal. So that's coming up in the last... Oh, you're not supposed to tell people they learn. That's right. That's not one of those... You'll be entertained in the last hour when we talk with Tom Woods. All right, to the news right now with Nick Tom.
Thank you very much, Alan. A very good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News. It's Wednesday, February 11th, the Feast of Our Lady of Lourdes. As Al mentioned, moving with lightning speed, key lawmakers announced just minutes ago a $789 billion economic stimulus measure designed to create millions of jobs in a nation reeling from recession. President Barack Obama could sign the now-reconciled bill within days. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid just said moments ago in a press conference, the middle ground we've reached creates more jobs than the original Senate bill and costs less than the original House bill. The bill includes help for victims of the recession in the form of unemployment benefits, food stamps, health coverage, and more, as well as billions for states that face the prospect of making deep cuts in their own programs. It also preserves Obama's signature tax cut, a break for millions of lower and middle income taxpayers, including those who don't even earn enough to pay any taxes. It's not immediately clear when the final votes in the two houses would occur. A House vote was possible as early as Thursday, with a Senate to follow before lawmakers begin a scheduled weekend vacation. As if to underscore the urgency, Obama said a few hours before the agreement was announced that machinery giant Caterpillar Inc. plans to rescind some of the 2,200 layoffs the firm recently announced once the stimulus is signed into law. Once again, the principal components of the emerging measure include money to help victims of the recession, as much as $44 billion in aid for the states, which face cuts of their own as a result of lower tax receipts, as well as the president's proposed tax cut for lower and middle income wage earners. This again reconciles the bill that was passed in the Senate and the House, now a total of $789 billion. Lawmakers are considering an amendment that would limit the death row appeals to only one. A new amendment presented by Attorney General Mark Shurtleff could save taxpayers millions. Kevin Church says it's ridiculous that a man who killed his brother is still alive.
My brother's dead and gone. This man's still on death row. We're paying for his food. We're paying for him to live. It's just really infuriating and frustrating.
Utah Attorney General Shurtleff said nobody suspects that the nine men on death row are innocent and there needs to be an end to the senseless appeals. However, amending Utah's constitution could cause conflict regarding due process and civil rights. Eight people are dead in eastern India after a marriage between a poor man and a wealthy woman angered the bride's family. Police say eight members of the groom's family were shot and beheaded after the couple's secret marriage. Their bodies were found floating in a nearby river. A police official says the woman's family invited the man's family to a meeting and then slaughtered them. The region where the incident occurred is known for revenge killings. Houston Astros shortstop Miguel Tejada has pled guilty to charges of lying to congressional investigators. The five-time All-Star is accused of lying about the use of performance-enhancing drugs in baseball. Tejada today entered his guilty plea in U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C. He is charged not with lying about his own alleged use of steroids, but for making false statements about conversations about drug use. And also from the sports world, Michael Phelps' apparent fondness for puffing may soon pay off. According to TMZ.com, the Olympic gold medalist has been offered $25,000 to be the spokesperson for a brand of cigars. A picture of Michael Phelps using a marijuana bong at the University of South Carolina has recently surfaced. It's unknown, although unlikely, that Phelps will accept the cigar company's offer. And now your fascinating fact for the day. Google receives more than 200 million search queries a day, over half of which come from outside the United States. Reporting for Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Nick Tom.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta, thanking you for being with me. G.K. Chesterton once said that the family serves as the principal check on government power and suggested that someday the family and the state would confront one another. Has that day arrived? My guest, Stephen Baskerville, is associate professor of government at Patrick Henry College, author of Taken into Custody, The War Against Fathers, Marriage, and the Family. He's also the author of a recent article in Touchstone magazine called Divorced from Reality. Stephen, good to have you here. Thank you.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
How bad is it? Are we really heading for a confrontation between family and government?
Oh, absolutely. We're there already. Most of the debate in this country on the family vastly underestimates the scope and nature of the problem. We have had an active debate about same-sex marriage, about single-parent homes, but we need to expand that much more. We need to have a debate about the family, about the welfare state, about divorce, above all, and child questions like child custody, and a whole panoply of issues that are being ignored. The most direct threat to the family today is divorce and family breakdown, and yet there's almost no public dialogue taking place at all.
What percentage of divorces are so-called no-fault or unilaterally instituted?
The vast majority. There's two scholars that estimate about 80% of divorces are unilateral. That is to say, they are over the objection of one spouse. So virtually about 80% of them are, as you say, no-fault divorces, so-called. So divorce is much more than two people deciding to part ways. It is usually a power grab by one spouse. And most people in this country, Americans, would be shocked if they understood what goes on in divorce courts.
It is a power grab not only by one spouse, it is often a power grab by the government, by various officials who profit from divorce.
How? How do they profit?
Well, there's a huge industry in this country that deals with divorce. Courts, lawyers, psychotherapists, counselors, mediators, vast economic interests. And they only kick in, they only increase their power and their earnings once the family is torn apart. And once the children especially are separated from at least one of their parents, that's where most of the power and most of the money comes from, is the question of child custody. So it all depends on separating the children from one of their parents. And most people think this happens voluntarily, but in most cases it does not. The children are forcibly taken from one of their parents.
Mm-hmm. So there's a whole child custody industry then.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's the cause of most of the fatherlessness, especially, that we see in this country. We hear this huge outcry, rightly so, about fatherless children. Yet most people don't realize that most of these children are taken from their fathers involuntarily and against the wishes of the fathers as well.
Let's go with that just a little bit. It was when I was growing up, and I guess up to the present day, it was common for people to say that in a divorce, judges favored the mothers when it came to custody. Is that true?
Yes, it is true, but it's much deeper than that. It's not just a matter of gender bias or sentimental attachment to motherhood.
Okay.
It's much more a systematic method of machinery for essentially creating fatherless children. In other words, the divorce courts exist for one purpose, to separate families, to take children away from their parents, most often their fathers, but sometimes their mothers as well. And it requires, they've essentially offered the mothers of this country a bargain that if you file for divorce, you can get the children, you can get the home, you can get the savings, you can get your husband's future earnings, you can even force him to pay your attorney fees. You get everything. If he raises any objection, we can throw him in jail without any trial and without any formal charge and without any due process of law. And then the diabolical thing about this bargain is that, on the other hand, the corollary is, if you don't do this, he might do it to you first. And in case he will win, he could win all of these things. So the terms of marriage and of divorce in this country are such that it's a race to the courthouse. Whoever divorces first wins.
People say, well, what do you expect? You really expect the government to force people to stay together?
Right. It's not really a matter of that at all. It never has been. It's a matter of forcing people to take responsibility for their actions. When you marry, you enter into what is arguably a covenant.
Sure.
What is a covenant? What Christians must believe is a covenant. But at the very minimum, it's a contract.
Right.
It's more than a contract for most of us. But it's at the minimum a contract. And in any other contract, if you break it,
And it is a civil contract, too. I mean, right?
It is a civil contract as well as, I believe it's a sacred covenant as well. But at the very minimum, even the civil contract is not enforced. It's
right.
the only
right.
contract in this country that is in violation of the constitutional requirement that contracts must be observed.
Yeah.
If you break it, it's the only contract where the party that breaks it gets the advantages. The party that remains faithful to the contract, to the covenant, to the marriage, is the one that is punished. It's a shocking state of affairs, but millions, literally millions of parents and spouses are hauled into the courts of this country. Everything is stripped away from them. The only explanation they get for it is a piece of paper that says divorce. Divorce has become a carte blanche. It's become a blank check for plundering your spouse, and in most cases, for taking children away from their fathers.
What drives this? Is it simply the animosity between two parties in a failed marriage? Are there other forces driving this?
There are very much larger forces driving this. It has part of its roots in the welfare state. Much of this started in low-income communities and single-parent homes on welfare. It has since spread to the middle class. It has its origins in the no-fault divorce laws that were brought in the 1970s. Driven by the bar associations and especially by the feminist organizations. So it's got the pecuniary interests of the bar associations, the psychotherapy industry, the counseling mediation industry, but it's ideologically driven as well. It's driven by organized feminism. The feminists and some elements of the bar associations were drafting no-fault divorce laws as early as the 1940s.
Is it time for serious Christian communities to simply say our understanding of marriage is so different than the state's that we simply we are no longer talking about the same thing, and to cease serving as state officials in performing marriages.
Very much so. Pastors and priests should at least be, at the very minimum, they should be calling this into question. Because, as you say, they are forced to act as government agents. They are consecrating marriages. They are marrying people. And then the government is coming along and tearing up that,
yeah,
that covenant, tearing up that contract. And the priests and the pastors are sitting there and saying, there's nothing we can do about it. You better see a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not acceptable. I mean, they're I hate to say this, and many of them don't realize they're doing it. They are themselves deceived. But they are deceiving their flock. They are deceiving the people they marry. They are consecrating a fraudulent contract. And it is shocking. They are bringing into contempt their own, well, in the case of Catholic Church, their own sacrament. Their own offices are being brought into contempt by this.
So what can be expected here? Should the church simply say we will no longer have our pastors ratify civil contracts?
That is a extreme measure, but I think yes, I think something like that must be said. I think the ministry in all the churches,
yeah,
in this country have an obligation to stand up and say, we are acting as agents of the state in these marriages, and we object to the state coming in and tearing up the covenants, the contracts that we are consecrating.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have even suggested that they should refuse to perform marriages until the marriage is. Until the marriage is inviolable from the agents of the state. I mean, we as Christians, we do stand up in civil matters on a number of issues,
right,
such as abortion and same-sex marriage, and quite rightly so. And I think divorce is one that we should also be standing up and being willing to protest,
yeah,
the state action in this, because it is the ministry, it is the church, it is our calling as Christians that has been brought into contempt by the actions of the government.
Well, has anything made same-sex marriage more plausible than the widespread culture of heterosexual divorce?
Absolutely, yes. I mentioned this in some of the articles I've published, that in fact, the same-sex marriage is almost certainly a direct product of the divorce revolution.
Yeah, right.
In other words, if marriage were still a monogamous contract, lifelong contract, the homosexuals wouldn't want it.
Yeah.
It's only because we have debased marriage that the homosexuals are asking for it.
Stephen, very keen. Thank you so much. Stephen Baskerville, Divorce from Reality, will have the article posted at AveMariaRadio.net.
With the stock market's volatility, it's easy to be paralyzed into doing nothing. Now is an excellent time to evaluate your investments from a financial and moral perspective. Call Jim and Stacy at Faith Investment Services because they're experts in finance. Their advice has helped their clients remain calm during this rocky time in the stock market. In fact, Jim and Stacy contacted their clients proactively to let them know their assets were protected. Of course, Jim and Stacy ensure their recommendations are screened through the prism of Christianity, so their clients' investments are free from companies that support abortion, homosexuality, and pornography. Now is the time to examine your investments with Jim and Stacy at Faith Investment Services. Call today and get morally directed investment advice. 1-800-529-9434. That's 1-800-529-9434. Or visit morallydirected.com.
Securities offered through Next Financial Group Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. Faith Investment Services is not an affiliate of Next Financial Group Incorporated.
The Ave Maria Communications Guild invites you to activate your faith. Heart to Heart Women's Apostolate is celebrating 10 years. All women are invited to their 10th anniversary potluck dinner Thursday, February 12th at Domino's Farms in Ann Arbor. The evening is only $10 and includes Mass, dinner, and Steve Ray on Why I Love Being Catholic. For more information, call 734-930-7497. Join the Miles Christi Priests for their monthly Day of Recollection, Sunday, February 15th at the Felician Sisters Mother House in Livonia. This day-long retreat includes two spiritual talks, exposition and benediction of the Blessed Sacrament, Holy Mass, and much more. Child care is available, and the day ends with a potluck dinner. For further details, call 248-596-9677. You can find many more events at our website, AveMariaRadio.net. To become a member of the Guild, call 877-288-1077.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Alice Rodriguez is a Dominican-American baseball player, currently third baseman for the New York Yankees. He's played shortstop in the past for the Mariners and for the Texas Rangers. Considered one of the best all-around ball players of all time. In fact, the youngest player ever to hit 500 home runs. And back in December 2007, he was asked about using performance-enhancing drugs. This is what he said.
For the record, have you ever used steroids, human growth hormone, or any other performance-enhancing substance?
No, I did.
And this is what he had to say about it yesterday.
I take a banned substance, and, for that, I'm very sorry and deeply regretful.
With me right now to talk about the not only this Alex Rodriguez situation, but the plague in Major League Baseball of performance-enhancing drugs is sports reporter and anchor at WXYZ, the ABC affiliate in Detroit, Michigan, Vic Faust. Vic, good to have you with me.
Al, it's good to talk to you, man. I don't get to see you enough, but I do get to hear you, and it's always good to share some airwaves with you.
Well, I appreciate that. And it's hard not to feel some just disgust about this whole thing. You've probably been watching him more carefully than I have, and you probably got the proper immunities built up. But but for someone like me that doesn't follow it that carefully, these stories, when they break in, I just shake my head. You must have to attribute them just to the incredible competitive drive and the intense commercial potential involved in sports.
Yeah, without a doubt. Does it disgust me? Yes, it disgusts me, but there are immunities that are built up, and it's a catch-22 when it comes to celebrity in our country. Yes, in a perfect world, our athletic heroes would be people that our kids could look up to, but I think we should know better. That's not the case. And I've often joked about this, and I don't want this to come across as being mean to all athletes, because there are several men and women who I know who do live good lives, who do care about God, including those who are doing it in a public way in the Catholic Church.
Sure.
However,
hey, you're an athlete yourself. I mean, you played sports, right?
Yeah, a former athlete at the University of Missouri, nothing on professional stage, but I always... But you know what? You do have a sense of celebrity. Even in TV, I mean, there are people that I run into that think that it's really cool to meet somebody who they see on TV, and all it is a job. But that goes back to the same which I was talking about, is the fact that you'd love to have them be heroes, but they're not. And I joke around, it's good to know athletes for what they do on TV, but you know what? Sometimes it's better not to know people because they're human, like we are. They're prone to mistakes. They're going to make mistakes. And I've been disgusted by all this, but quite honestly, I'm not surprised. Because when this started occurring, at least the rumors, back in the early 2000s, 2002, 2003, it's like, yeah, maybe this is going to happen. Maybe some of that's true, but probably not with the big stars. Just guys that are trying to make it.
Right.
They're trying to get that paycheck.
Yeah.
Well, now we've seen shoe after shoe fall, and this is the biggest shoe by far that anybody could have foreseen. And the only reason A-Rod came clean on this was because he got caught. You ran the soundbite that he had with Katie Couric.
Mm-hmm.
People heard that. He got caught. He had to come clean, or it was going to be a major distraction for him, not only the rest of his life, like Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens and Miguel Tejada and Mark McGwire and everybody else who's refused to admit it, despite very solid evidence. So he came out and he talked about it, and I'm glad that he did. First of all, he was forced to, but he did, and now he's admitted it. And the more awareness that we have, the better. But there's a bigger issue at heart here. You brought it up. It's about getting paid. It's about competition in our society. It's about making the buck, and whatever is going to get you ahead, you need to do. And a lot of people feel that they need to do, and in my opinion, a lot of this started with one of my former heroes, Mark McGwire, because people saw what he did.
I remember.
And he broke the home run record. He hit 70 home runs in a season. And guys saw this. A-Rod talked about seeing it. Barry Bonds and people who know Barry said, wow, there's Mark McGwire getting all this hype. Look at his body. Look what he's done. Maybe, you know, I've had a great career, but I want what Mark has. Right. I'm going to get that extra something.
Yeah. Yeah, this is not limited to second-tier players. These are record setters. These are all-stars. What happens to the record books in something like this?
You throw them out. I mean, seriously, you throw them out. As far as Mark McGwire did and what A-Rod has done and what Barry Bonds has done, to me, it doesn't exist. You go back and you talk about Roger Maris being the single-season home run king and Hank Aaron being the career home run king.
Okay.
That's how I look at it. I mean, you're talking about inflated numbers, and there's no doubt about it. Let's break down A-Rod real quick, and not to get too X's and O's for our listeners.
No, that's good. I always learn something. Go ahead, Vic.
During the seasons that he has admitted to, these are just that he has admitted to, and there's no proof. He might have done something else. I mean, but what he has admitted to is using performance-enhancing drugs in 2001, 2002, and 2003. During those seasons, his numbers are significantly higher than his other seasons that he has had. 10 seasons of, you know, good numbers. 3 seasons of outstanding numbers. A comparison, an average of about 53 home runs per season while using performance-enhancing drugs, as opposed to about 39 when he wasn't. About 25 more RBIs per season, about 25 to 30 RBIs per season, as opposed to when he wasn't. So the results are there. Barry Bonds, incredible seasons. All of a sudden, when he puts on 35, 40 pounds and starts hitting home runs. Mark McGwire, all of a sudden, rejuvenates his career. I mean, Mark McGwire hit a ton of home runs before his body really changed, but he started to break down, and he started to get older. And then all of a sudden, he made this great comeback. That's what performance-enhancing drugs can do, and not just steroids, but new designer drugs of HGH, which a lot of people can't even test for, and science is always one step ahead, as it seems. It just makes me sick because it is our society that we live in. We're worried about, you know, what we're going to do. There's a lack of, you know, faith in what you're, you know, living your life for, and that's where the problem occurs, because you talk to athletes, as I have so many times, and, you know, you're worried about, it's fear. I mean, it's fear. Okay, if I'm not able to stay in the league, what am I going to do? That's my paycheck. That's what I've done my entire life. I've got to stay here to get that money. What do I have to do to keep, look at this. And from a baseball perspective, everybody was doing it. It's important also to know that A-Rod was the only one of about 104 names that have been released so far that did test positive in Major League Baseball. And those names will come out eventually. But A-Rod was the big fish in that pond, so that's why we've heard of him. So it wasn't just him. It's been so many men.
Now, will this warrant a suspension? Or will it...
You know what? That's a great point. That's something that I haven't even thought about. Major League Baseball really hasn't done that with other people yet, with Bud Selig, the commissioner. If it was in the NFL, absolutely, because they've now got a commissioner in Roger Goodell who's come in with a zero-tolerance policy, which is what I thought the NFL needed, and he's kind of laid the hammer down. It'll be curious to see what happens, because I am still under the assumption, playing college football, knowing guys that use performance-enhancing drugs, and then going to the NFL to maintain body types and be as fast and big and strong as these guys are, that as soon as the NFL gets serious and the NFL is not serious about testing, it's going to be even bigger than baseball. That's just my opinion and my assumption because I've seen things and I've known guys that are using those things. But you know what? They have tried to break down on it. But you hear baseball guys talk about, wait till you see what happens in the NFL. And I've talked to some major league guys about it, because they thought that, you know, obviously it's got to be going on in Major League or in professional football like it is in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, that's a good point. Now,
I don't know if there'll be I don't think there'll be a suspension. I really don't, because they haven't set a precedent like that as of yet. And also keep in mind that when A-Rod was doing this, there wasn't necessarily rules against it in baseball. Even though it was illegal in society, there weren't necessarily strong rules for what he was using. And, you know, and some of these designer drugs – you know, a drug's a drug, but some of these designer drugs aren't specifically named, and that's why they're trying to get it under the performance-enhancing category.
Now, did he lie under oath? I mean, we have Barry Bonds is going to trial for that. Miguel Tejada has pleaded guilty. Does Rodriguez have a perjury problem?
No, he doesn't, because he never said anything under oath. But that brings up the fact where you've got Miguel Tejada, as you brought up, another guy who could have been considered for Major League Baseball Hall of Fame, put up great numbers.
Yeah, All-Star.
Today that he pleads guilty to lying to Congress about the use of performance-enhancing drugs and buying HGH. Roger Clemens right now, one of the best pitchers of all time.
Yeah.
They're investigating him right now, whether he lied to Congress when he denied using steroids or HGH. And I'll tell you what, all the evidence points against him, and Congress is serious about it because he is the one that insisted upon coming to Congress and telling them that he did not use steroids. And now all the evidence is pointing against him, so he won't get an easy go. And then Barry Bonds, that perjury case starts later this month. Lying under oath about not knowingly taking steroids. I used a cream that I didn't know was necessarily steroids. You know, these guys know exactly what they put into their bodies. As a former college athlete, these guys know more. It's almost the opposite way, Al. You know more than the average person what you're putting into your body.
Absolutely.
Your body is your work.
Yep. Yeah.
It's really sickening. It's just, I love sports. But it should be a good lesson for all of us, that, and for parents, too, that push kids to be the best, to get that high school starting spot, to get that college scholarship, to keep things in perspective. It should be done for fun. Yes, if your child is good enough, then great. If God so desires it and he is willing, fantastic. But you start pushing and you start pushing, and then things like this happen because it's all out of fear, and there's no need for us to do this about worrying about how we're going to, you know, get paid and continue to do that. Because I don't think it's done maliciously. Most of the time it's done because you're worried about how you're going to succeed to make money to support your family.
Yeah. This is a good example of where victory trumps virtue.
Of course. It always does. Virtue, what's that?
Now, given when did this problem begin, and is it possible that as we go back and look over the history of the sport, are we going to have questions about some of the great superstars of the past? You know, Reggie Jackson, Hank Aaron, Cal Ripken.
I don't think we will with those three men that you mentioned. And in that era, it's hard to pinpoint, but all of a sudden, this is what really makes it good for baseball people, specifically in baseball, where you can tell. You started to see incredible numbers and huge bodies and very fast people all of a sudden break out in the late 90s, the early 2000s.
Okay.
Those were the most incredible baseball offensive numbers we have ever seen. And then after the crackdown came, numbers have gone back down. Workout regimens haven't gone down. Guys are working out harder than they ever have. Diets, nutrition, you name it. So I think that you could see when that problem started, and I still think it goes back to Mark McGwire. His brother came out about 3 weeks ago, who is a former bodybuilder, steroid user, said that he's the one that introduced Mark to steroids in the 90s, and then Mark started using some of the, and I say Mark started, we know this for a fact, Andro. And that was a designer drug that's now banned by baseball. It wasn't when McGwire was using it. He used to keep that. I saw it myself when I covered the Cardinals in his locker. It wasn't banned by baseball. But the steroid stuff with Mark goes back a little further. I think that's when it started. Guys started looking at that. Of course, you know, time heals all, but nobody's going to forget the numbers with all of these major cases. Maybe if it were middle-of-the-run guys, but we're talking about two of the best offensive hitters of all time, Barry Bonds, Alex Rodriguez, quite possibly the best pitcher of all time, Roger Clemens. You know, Mark McGwire in the mix, the first guy, the home run king, the likable guy. These are some of the biggest names in baseball that you can imagine, which is why I don't laugh at the fact when people talk about a wing, if guys get into the Hall of Fame, stating, talking about, with the asterisks, about this juiced-up era of baseball.
Yeah. Interesting. How dangerous is it? Are these guys going to have health problems later on?
They could. Absolutely, they could. A lot of the guys, You saw Mark McGwire start to deteriorate. His knees started to give out on him, and that's one of the side effects that can be caused from using performance-enhancing drugs. And a lot of the things we may not know for a decade or two decades because science is moving so fast that, you know, hey, it seems great now and it's not hurting, and it doesn't seem like it's going to cause any problems. Now, who knows? Mm-hmm. We don't know. And that's the big risk that guys are taking. It certainly seems like it's getting better than and more hard to detect. And I guess the word I'll say is a little more healthy than before because the science is getting better, as it always does, and you're not taking the same steroids that you give horses and so forth. And we saw steroids killing, you know, former all-pro football players like Lyle Alzado. It's not to that effect, but it's moving along, and all I know, I was an athlete. I know other athletes. I knew guys that used steroids on my football team. You have to have the talent to play first. These Major League Baseball players and football players have talent because I watched guys, and I knew some guys that didn't have talent. They used steroids just to get to where they were, and it only got them so far. But if you have talent and you add strength and you add size, it's only going to help you. I mean, I knew a guy that used he was a friend at the time. He used steroids to put on 30 pounds, and then he got off. He took one cycle, and that was helping put on 30 pounds, and then he increased his workload, and he was able to keep that 30 pounds on, and then he got off. He thinks it was the best thing he ever did, you know, so you've got these situations out there, too. And these people are out there, you know, influencing kids, and that's why parents, as everything, with faith, politics, life, it should start in the home with the parents. And do your best to train your kids up, to teach them the best. And not just for boys, but for girls as well, because there are all kinds of designer drugs for women in sports as well.
Rodriguez is only one of the 104 players who tested positive for steroids in 2003. Will we soon know the names of the others?
Yeah, it's going to come out. I mean, I don't know anybody on the inside, but it's going to come out.
All right. Vic, great job. Thanks so much.
Father John Trigilio and Mother Dolores Hart are just two of the six distinguished speakers participating in the 12th Annual Holy Trinity Apostolates Lenten Symposium. The symposium will be held on Saturday, March 14th at St. Cyril and Methodius Catholic Church on Ryan and 18 Mile in Sterling Heights. Holy Mass begins at 8 a.m. with the Most Reverend Francis Reese, Auxiliary Bishop of Detroit, and concludes at 4 p.m. Two other exceptional speakers on the program are Reverend Monsignor Christopher Nolte, former Vatican official in the Congregation of the Clergy, and Father Leo Pedlinghug from PBS-TV's Grace Before Meals. Log on to HolyTrinityApostolate.com for the full listing of renowned program speakers and guests, or call 248-885-1190. The 12th Annual Holy Trinity Apostolate Lenten Symposium, Saturday, March 14th, emceed by Channel 7's Vic Faust. Your $40 pre-registration includes lunch, so call 248-885-1190 or go to HolyTrinityApostolate.com.
The Ave Maria CD library continues to grow. On our Christ is the Answer program, Father John Ricardo is presenting a series of four talks on prayer. It's Lord, Teach Us to Pray. He addresses the practical steps, praying with Scripture, our Mother Mary, and much more. The four CD box set is $34. Just prior to the election, we featured Voting as a Catholic by Dr. Peter Kraft and The Truth About Stem Cell Research by Right to Life of Michigan's Ed Rivett. The election is passed, but these CDs should be in your library. All editions of Christ in the Afternoon, Catholic Connection, Christ is the Answer, Putting on the Mind of Christ, The Doctor is In, and Heart, Mind, and Strength are also available. All single talks and programs are on high-quality CDs and are $8.50 each. To place your order for one of these titles or to inquire about a talk topic of interest to you, call 734-930-4506. 734-930-4506. Or write orders at AveMariaRadio.net.
I'm Al Cresta. Nadja Suleman has 14 children, including a newborn octuplets, no job, no income, owes $50,000 in student loans, and still she says she's confident that she can afford to raise her huge family, insisting she can do it without welfare. In an interview yesterday, she said she could use student loans to make ends meet until she finishes graduate school and gets a job. But, of course, there are likely to be millions of dollars in medical bills alone, and increasingly likely that taxpayers will foot many of those bills. This is what she said yesterday on NBC.
People feel, you know, this woman is being completely irresponsible and selfish to bring these children in the world.
All I have to say,
without a clear source of income and enough help to raise them.
I know I'll be able to afford them when I'm done with my schooling. If I were just sitting down, watching TV, and not being as determined as I am to succeed and have a better, provide a better future for my children, I believe that would be considered, to a certain degree, selfish.
So the world outside is saying, what are you doing?
I'm providing myself to my children. I'm loving them unconditionally, accepting them unconditionally. Everything I do, I'll stop my life for them and be present with them and hold them and be with them. All I wanted was children. I wanted to be a mom. That's all I ever wanted in my life. I love my children.
Well, I don't think anybody doubts that in some way she loves her children. With me right now to talk about this situation is Dr. Pia DeSeleni, a moral theologian. She received a doctorate in sacred theology, summa cum laude, from the Pontifical University of the Holy Cross in Rome. And Pia, good to have you with me.
Hey, Al, it's good to be back on.
Well, she wants to be a mother, but really, shouldn't she be saying, I want to have a family? I mean, basically, there's no father here, just a sperm donor.
You raise a good point, and I mean, unfortunately, the horse is already out of the gate.
Yeah.
And I think so much. I think so much of the concern with the situation is that it is not a good situation from the get-go. And unfortunately, the children already exist.
Right.
There's nothing to be done about that. And you know, it's admirable that she didn't have an abortion or the euphemism of pregnancy reduction.
Mm-hmm.
But the children already exist. So this is it's a fine line going forward. I mean, we don't want to be encouraging this, but at the same token, we have to be thinking about what's best for the children.
And I guess that is the question. We have two ways to go here. You're right. The situation exists. The question now is what's best for the children. But there's also the question of, well, can this be avoided next time around? And so my thoughts begin with the industry that took her, you know, basically doesn't seem to have asked any serious questions of her, but all they did was take a biopsy of her wallet.
But the industry is completely unregulated.
That's what I want.
You know, this is the problem.
Yeah.
And I mean, pro-lifers in this country, in the United States, they were nervous about regulating IVF, you know, back in the late 1970s, early 80s, because they said if we're regulating it, then we're somehow acknowledging, you know, if we push for regulation, we're somehow giving it validation. And I think thinking has changed, not just with regards to that situation, but, you know, we have limitations on abortion
right.
that we push for.
Sure,
and,
sure.
Yeah, you know what? We'd like to see a place in which there is absolutely no abortion. We can't do that. That's not the situation right now. But we can push for limits. And so I think the thinking, unfortunately, caught on a little too late there. So the industry, it's not self-regulating. It is completely unregulated by the federal government. In, you know, other parts of the world, they can only implant one or two embryos because
mm-hmm.
there's this. You do have this ethical dilemma of, quote-unquote, multiple births. And you do have a situation in which it can be life-threatening to the mother, or you know that one of the fetuses isn't going to make it, or they're going to, that if there were only two fetuses, they would be doing a lot better than five. And so you come up with all of these quagmires. And so I think part of it could be taken care of by regulating the industry. That said, even with a regulated IVF industry, I'm not comfortable with IVF. The church obviously would not endorse it. We have to be looking at a bigger picture, which is, you know, really getting to we have to be thinking again, what is family and what are children? And if you look at Nadja Solomon's statements, I mean, a lot of times when she's talking about her children, and I mentioned this on my website today in a piece that I did on this situation, when she's talking about the situation, it's like having children is therapy for her.
Right.
There's a fantastic piece in the LA Times that I link to at my website talking about this sense of entitlement, and people have a sense of entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
I have an entitlement to experience pregnancy. I have a right to this. I have a right to experience wherever I want, when I want. And, you know, unfortunately, what she's done with, you know, having these 14 children out of wedlock through IVF with a donor in a bad situation, et cetera, I mean, that's not really different from the me generation or culture that we live in. So in many ways, it's very consistent with it. So I think we have to take a step back and say, okay, wait a minute. We have to check our ideas of how do we view children? Are they a form of therapy? Are they a form just of fulfillment? Maybe children are a gift. You know, maybe children have a right. And John Paul II had a beautiful language talking about the child's right to be born as a result of love, i.e., as the result of the expression of love between a husband and wife. Mm-hmm. And I think if we start thinking, taking this back to what do the children deserve, I think we begin to see a shift in the conversation. However, that's not where the cultural discussion is going. We need to start raising those questions.
Yeah. What is she experiencing right now? I realize this is speculative, but if these children were brought into the world as not ends in and of themselves, but as instruments for her therapy, I mean, then she's given motherhood a bad name.
Yeah, she has, and I mean, she's also, you know, it's the fact that she's hired a team of PR people kind of, to me, sends an alarm bell, and that she wants to make a career of, as, you know, in psychology and as a child expert. All of these things kind of send alarm bells, and I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, how does this all piece together? Did you have these children so that you could become the expert that you wanted to be?
No.
And by the way, having children doesn't necessarily make you an expert in children, as, you know, many parents will tell you.
Right.
And many successful, many good parents will second-guess themselves and say, oh, I wish I'd done that differently. And, you know, they'd never put themselves forward as an expert.
I mean, she's rolling her degree in child development into a reality show.
Well, and this is, and unfortunately, this we see happening already. I mean, you know, I know a lot of pro-lifers like the show John and Kate Plus 8 because it's a celebration of family. Well, I'm not sure that it's really great to be, for your children to be experiencing potty training live on national television. I mean, there are some relationships within a family that should be somewhat private. And the family is a private place. It is, it's also a protected place. So I think, you know, there is this celebrity culture, whether it's people having, you know, multiple children and doing reality shows on them, or, you know, Angelina, or Brad and Angelina Jolie with, you know, the Children of the Rainbow. I mean, this is, we have to get back to what are children, why do we have them?
Is that the kind of conversation America is likely to have, though? We tend to shy away from that.
We do, but I think we can never underestimate the conversations that we have at work, with our friends, with our colleagues, you know, in the grocery store. I mean, I've gotten into conversations with people, you know, when I was in D.C. about the March for Women's Lives, which is this huge, you know, Planned Parenthood, pro-abortion rally.
Right.
And I just kind of got into conversation with people at the grocery store about it, and you just get people thinking. And it means, you know, I don't mean that we come out and we just lecture people or we, you know, preach to them and so forth, but mostly ask questions. And I think when we ask those questions, we can't underestimate what happens at a grassroots level. And, you know, we've got the national pundits going on and on about this, but what really shapes ideas are the conversations that we have with our friends, our family, our colleagues, and finally what shapes the culture is the witness that we provide. And I think the way, you know, one of the biggest and most significant witnesses that I think that's out there is when you see a beautiful family. And it doesn't mean that every child is dressed perfectly. It doesn't mean, you know, that things aren't a little bit chaotic. But when you just see a wonderful, beautiful family, and that witness is going to do more, frankly, than a whole lot of pro-life activities that we've got going out there.
Yeah.
And it's going to do a lot for marriage, too, because people, they see somebody who's happy, people who are happy, who love each other. They see children who are happy. I mean, those things stick with you. And we're a culture that we like stories, we like pictures, we like images. Well, then we have to be responsible for providing the right stories and the right images.
Yeah. This is a great opportunity for conversation. People
we're talking about Nadja and the octuplets and the six other kids. I know one thing is that listeners of this program accept, and that is that once these children were conceived, they were in the world. I mean, they were conceived. They were persons. They didn't become persons. They were persons. And it would have been compounding moral evil had she gone ahead and decided to do selective, embryo reduction. But once we get past that, what do we say about her?
It's really, really difficult. And I think, I was talking with one of my brothers about this. He and my father are both attorneys. They've done a lot of dependency cases. And, people now are talking about, well, maybe the kids should be taken away from her and so forth. And I think we have to be careful because this is a difficult situation. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, as we know, difficult situations make bad law.
Right.
And, people are saying, well, she's got too many kids. She doesn't have enough money. She only has a 3-bedroom house that she shares with her parents. At the end of the day, none of those are grounds for taking somebody's kids away
right,
from them.
Right.
And you have to decide whether or not there's a substantial risk to the children. And that has to be proven not by commentators like myself, not by pundits. It has to be proven by experts who are qualified and have access to all of the facts. O'Reilly had a segment on last night, and he showed the messy house. Guess what? A messy house isn't grounds for taking somebody's kids away. And just because you get the good house keeping seal of approval doesn't mean that you're qualified to have kids right. either. So, it's, again, I keep saying this over and over again, it's a really difficult situation, but we have to focus on what's best for the children. And there's a lot of talk now, and yeah, you know what? I don't think anybody's excited about the fact that the state is going to have to, meaning we taxpayers are right. going to be providing for their care, all right? But think about it. This isn't about what we're doing for Nadja Suleiman.
Right.
It's about what we owe the children, and that we owe the children what's best for them. And what is being proven in so many of these dependency cases, and there's a lot of literature that's coming out of this, is that, a not-so-great parent is often better than no parent at all.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of dependency cases that are being reversed because of this.
In this case, though, Pia, is there prima facie evidence that she's not all there, that she's unsound?
I think that there's some evidence that suggests that somebody needs to take a hard look here.
Mm-hmm.
And because of her situation, when you're in the hospital and you have a situation where, in most serious situations in the hospital, a social worker is assigned. So a social worker would already be assigned, and the social worker is going to have to be looking at the situation saying, look, can she provide for these kids? Can she take care of them? Can she parent them? Those are all legitimate questions, but they've got to be asked in the right context by the people who have the authority to do that.
Pia, how can people get a hold of your column today?
PiaDeSoleni.com, my website.
Okay, and we'll have it linked at our website as well. Pia, thanks so much. I'm Al Cresta.
The forecast, cloudy skies.
Honey, what's the weather forecast?
We can expect
6 inches of snow.
Honey, what's the weather forecast?
Freezing rain.
Honey,
don't ask.
Winter. It happens every year. And every year we worry about our cars getting through it. Well, here's one way to get some peace of mind. Take your car to Fozzie's, where WDEO listeners not only get great service, they get 15% off any repairs. Fozzie also has great deals on tires. And with all those potholes around, it may be time for a front-end alignment.
Low near 15.
Honey, what's the weather like?
Okay, for the next 3 months, it's going to be snowing, blowing, freezing, and you're going to keep asking me about the weather.
I think I'll go to Fozzie's.
Fozzie's Westgate Auto Center is located near major freeways on West Stadium in Ann Arbor, just south of Jackson Road. Call 1-800-895-8700 today, or stop by and mention WDEO. That's 1-800-895-8700. Fozzie,
home of the $16.99 oil change.
You now have two great Detroit area locations for religious merchandise. There's A. Mutea Church Supply in Garden City, and now G.A. Fuchs Church Supply in Madison Heights. Between the two stores, they offer the largest selection of religious merchandise in southern Michigan, with everything from statuary, rosaries, and crucifixes to a large inventory of books. If you need it for your religious group or services, they have it. A. Matea at G.A. Fuchs Church Supply. Just choose the location closest to you. You'll find A. Matea Church Supply on Ford Road, just east of Merriman Road in Garden City. If you'd like to call for more information, the number is 734-513-2950. Write it down, 734-513-2950. If you're closer to Madison Heights, you can stop at G.A. Fuchs Church Supply on Stevenson Highway, just south of 14 Mile Road, off I-75. You can call them at 248-589-0200. You'll want to write that one down, too. 248-589-0200. They look forward to serving you.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Thanking you for being with me. Coming up in the next hour, Meltdown, Thomas Woods Jr., free market look at why the stock market collapsed, the economy tanked, and government bailouts will make things worse. Tom is author of a variety of books that are worth mentioning, including The Church and the Market, A Catholic Defense of the Free Economy. And I'm looking forward to talking with him. This book, Meltdown, I'm very pleased with. I'm always looking for works that summarize events in lucid and clear and memorable language, and this book does it. So Thomas is with us in the next hour. And, you know, it's worth taking a look back, too, at what happened in Japan. You know, back beginning, well, I think 1989, they had a similar problem in that real estate values were heavily over-assessed, and these were unsustainable. They got to the place where many Japanese firms had invested in not only holdings in stocks and real estate, but when those assets plummeted, they had problems. They had problems borrowing. Credit froze up. I mean, there's real parallels here. And by the way, if you hadn't heard already, the reconciliation, House Reconciliation Committee managed to get this bill through today. So we'll take a look at the economic stimulus package. And you're welcome to join us.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
Here's Bishop Earl Boyer speaking about the upcoming Accept the Challenge Men's Conference.
The theme of this year's conference is going to be, With God All Things Are Possible. Come to this conference and hear how God can make all things possible, how God can heal. God can make you a better man, a better husband, a better son, a better father. My brothers, it's going to be a wonderful day at the men's conference. I will be there for Mass, so please come to the conference.
Accept Bishop Boyer's invitation. Register now to attend Accept the Challenge. It's Saturday, March 7th at the Lansing Center. Speakers are Bishop Boyer, the priest with the amazing conversion story, Father Donald Calloway, dynamic lay evangelist Jesse Romero, and Ed and Eddie Reinhardt. Advanced registration is $45. Go to acceptthechallenge.org or call 810-225-0358. Put it on your calendar now. It's Accept the Challenge Catholic Men's Conference in the Diocese of Lansing. Register at acceptthechallenge.org.
The Ave Maria Communications Guild invites you to activate your faith. Heart to Heart Women's Apostolate is celebrating 10 years. All women are invited to their 10th anniversary potluck dinner Thursday, February 12th at Domino's Farms in Ann Arbor. The evening is only $10 and includes Mass, dinner, and Steve Ray on Why I Love Being Catholic. For more information, call 734-930-7497. Join the Miles Christi priests for their monthly Day of Recollection, Sunday, February 15th, at the Felician Sisters Mother House in Livonia. This day-long retreat